think it's time to discuss your philosophy of drug use as it relates to artistic endeavor.
A three-win series. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it. And the Blazers win the series for the first time.
I can't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball, and the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up. Well, this could change the course of this match.
So, nothing happens in the NBA once the finals finish.
No, yet. No. What are you drinking, by the way, Boozo?
I am drinking a lovely little South Australian Malbec, actually. What are you drinking, Dr. Yobo? I think
I'm drinking Monteith's Doppelbock, which is not a beer I have had for a while, but it's a beer that I thought I should revisit. And I mostly thought I should revisit it because a nice man sent me an email saying there's a six pack of Doppelbock waiting for you at your local Liquorland. Ladies and gentlemen, Bezo has finally squared away one of his bets. The one that dates from 2009. The one about will Carmichael Hunt ever win the best and fairest of the Gold Coast Suns, which we made when he joined the fucking Gold Coast Suns. He didn't last 5 years. He had to make the best and fairest in the 5 years. I think he lasted three before he got run out of the joint on drugs.
Well, he played for the Wallabies today. So.
Well, exactly right. He's fucking... He's the greatest code hopper in the history of hopping codes, because he went back and played for the Broncos in between, did he not?
No, he went straight to the Reds.
He went back and played a bit of league.
Oh, shall we have a six pack on it?
No, because I went back and checked the tweets. We were remarking on the fact that he'd gone back and played rugby league in between.
I think when he quit the Suns, I think the rumours was that he'd signed with the Broncos, but he turned up at the Reds because there was a little bit of a gap. In between he went and played, didn't he go and play for Toulon in between?
Everybody does. It's part of the job.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did, eh? Anyway, enjoy your free beer. I'm glad you like it.
I'll enjoy the next dozen when they finally turn up.
Now that I did find it very funny though, when I was like, where do you get your beer from? And you're like, the supermarket, like normal people. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. I live in Queensland.
Yeah, there is that.
Silly
me. Although we do have Liquorland, which is, you know, it's not the same Liquorland as you have over in Australia. It's not part of what's Liquorland? Part of Coles. So they're West Farmers, I suppose. It's not part of that empire. It's separate. It's just it happens to have the same brand name, but a totally different company. That's important information for you to know, you who are listening to the Balls podcast. I'm the Doc. He's Bezo.
Yes. Yeah, the NBA went a bit fucking nuts this week, I have to say.
No, they didn't. There were no games. There was nothing going on. They just had a bit of a draft with some kids and doled out the children amongst themselves. And much like redacted, Jimmy Savile redacted. It's totally normal.
There was one day where I just got sucked into the vortex on Twitter, and like 40 minutes went past and I realized I hadn't done any work for 40 minutes, and I was like, fuck, I really need to get off the net.
You can
start doing some work.
Probably track that by the amount of Twitter activity from the podcast account, because you've been out just hurling rocks at people on the Twitter on the podcast Twitter account.
Well,
one point I said maybe I should I literally said I should change the fucking password. I think that was when you went after Peter Gabriel for some reason that made no fucking sense at all.
I just love staring at him. That's all. No, that was who's that? That was Russell Jackson, I think. That was all down on.
Shouts to Phil Collins.
I got no shouts for Phil Collins.
But I mean, this is After Dark content. But Phil Collins was the fucking drummer in Genesis. That tells you all you need to know. Peter Gabriel was not the drummer. He had songwriting talent. Phil Collins, was the drummer.
Yeah. Famous for a Cadbury commercial, that's about it.
Yes. The NBA. We really love this game.
The thing I found really interesting about the draft was there was very few teams that were fucking insane. In fact, you could make the argument there was only really one, and that was Chicago.
Well, and I contend that a lot of the talk about how insane Chicago are depends on your value of how you value Jimmy Butler. And I realized that my reaction to the Bulls trade was, oh, yeah, fair enough. It wasn't, the Bulls are the most moronic front office in the history of the world. It was like, no, it's just Jimmy Butler's good. He's not a god. You know,
no, he's not a god, but I think he's worth more than the seventh pick.
But he didn't go for the seventh pick. He went for the seventh pick and two lottery picks.
And a guy coming off a knee injury that they're going to have to pay next year.
Yeah, but he's rehabbing in time. And they're both good players. They can both shoot better than Jimmy Butler from the perimeter.
It's almost a buy-in on the coaching staff, actually, because both those guys are run. You know, they're running gun players. They're not sort of hold the ball and pound the rock 50 times sort of players. You know, LaVine likes to get out and run and dunk the ball. So, yeah.
And LaVine was much better since they moved him out. I think he was playing point guard and they moved him out to shooting guard. He was much better after that. And Chris Dunn is was always being held up as this incredible prospect point guard that all these smart-ass American basketball people were trying to get Ricky Rubio traded to get him out the shop so that Chris Dunn could get game time. It's interesting that the Wolves have been happy to kind of flag that off, or at least Tibbs has been happy to flag that off to get his man back.
Mm. Well, I think, too, there's two things. Is don't underestimate how a player goes with a good point guard. Like, Butler might play, you know, he's been playing with Rondo and whatever spare parts they can cobble together. Like, he hasn't had a decent point guard.
And who's the point guard he's going to be playing with are the Wolves?
Well, at the moment, it's Rubio.
But they're trading him.
No, they came out today and said that they're absolutely not trading him. He is not on the trading block.
Yeah, that's nice. That's exactly what Paul George said. He said he was staying in Indiana right up to the point where he said he wasn't. I mean, they shouldn't trade Rubio. Rubio's a very good point guard, and he's not a guy who needs the ball that much, and he's not a guy who's going to dominate scoring. He's perfect for everything that you'd want when you've got a ball dominant two.
Yeah, well, the other thing is too that if you've got tight spacing where, you know, because no one shoots threes in that side, if you've got tight spacing, then isn't a guy that can find seams in smaller amounts of space rather handy? I think they'd be mad to trade Rubio with that team.
I don't see any reason to do it, which means they'll do it. But I don't hate the Bulls rebuild. I don't hate these pieces for a rebuild. It's fine. It depends. Yeah. If Wade hangs around, he's a mentor. If he doesn't hang around, if they buy him out, then that's fine. It's fine. You know, at least they're doing something that's a direct. And Garpax came out and said that we're setting a direction. You know, we're saying, like, here we are. And that at least empowers Hoiberg to know exactly where the fuck he is.
I guess my feeling is that they did it.
I mean, they should have got more for Butler, but no one was giving more for Butler. And they didn't need to give the fucking 15 or 16 or whatever it was that they threw in on top. That was the most egregious mistake. But I guess I don't value Jimmy Butler that highly. But I thought Chris Dunn, LaVine, and the seven was plenty for Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see this year. If he can drag Minnesota up into the eight, which, you know, like someone pointed out, okay, they're going to get better, but who in the West is getting worse? And everyone says, well, Memphis or the Mavs or whoever.
I believe it when I see it.
Yeah, that's right. We sat here last year and went, oh, yeah, the Memphis are going to get worse, and they've got a fucking really good coach and two really good players, and they're really, really fucking on the ball. Why are they going to get worse again?
Look, Conley and Marc Gasol are not washed yet. and they're not done yet, and they're still going to find a bunch of hard asses to surround them, and they'll be okay.
If you watch Conley in that Spurs series, mate, I think he actually enhanced his reputation. Like, he took it to the Spurs. You know, they really missed Tony Allen in that series, someone to sort of slow Kawhi down a bit. But
yeah, well, they missed Tony Allen from 2 years ago. I don't think that Tony Allen's necessarily coming back.
The point I wanted to bring up about the shooting with the Timberwolves, which I found, and again, I can't remember where I read or heard this week.
Because let's not underestimate this. They've traded away a hell of a lot of their outside shooting. I mean, Dunn and Levine made up quite a lot.
Well, Levine, Levine was there.
Particularly Levine, once they'd moved him out to two, because he was drafted as a point guard. And in the first half of his first season, he was a bit, he basically floundered. And then he got moved out, and suddenly it started to work.
Not as many teams have a dedicated shooting coach as I thought. Like, I thought it would have been over half the league, but it's only like four teams that have a dedicated shooting coach.
Is that because a lot of guys do their own, individually have their own, a bit like golfers have swing coaches?
No, I think it's more that it's part of, it's rolled into an assistant coach's job. So they'll have an offensive assistant coach, and part of his job is shooting. But one of the interesting little tidbits that kicked out of the pods I listened to last week was that the Golden State they basically threw all the money they could at the Spurs shooting coach to get him to come over to Golden State, and he didn't budge. because, you know, like, he is seen as a genuine edge to, you know, a competitive edge. And that's what makes me... You know, like, if you could get... I can't understand, if you've got someone like Rubio, why you wouldn't have a dedicated shooting coach working on his shot mechanics. I realise that it's not just shot mechanics. I realise that a lot of it's between your head as well, from that, you know, Haberstroh piece that came out a couple of years ago. But, like, where they're all trying to get an edge now, it just seems bizarre that they don't have a guy that, you know... Like, I'm sure there's guys working under Chip England at the Spurs that they could, you know, if you can't steal the guru, then steal the assistant coach that's the best mates with him, who can at least approximate 75% of what he's doing.
Well,
that's the thing. But has no one tried? That's what I find.
You know that people have tried, and you know that this is where we are. So it's not a, it sounds like it's a skill that is not translatable through coaching. In terms of two other coaches. How do you teach someone to be a shot doctor?
Yeah, that's it. Maybe he's just got the mix of the technical and the mind.
He's a shot whisperer.
Yeah, that's right. You almost have to be like part psychologist, part absolute technical nerd
down. Let's be real. They have to be all psychologists, because it's like the whole, like Haberstroh's piece on free throw shooting. Free throw shooting is entirely in the head. It's about putting yourself in a position to have reproducible mechanics, but that's entirely between the ears of the dude standing at the line. That nobody, biomechanics aren't going to fix your shitty free throws. I mean, LeBron's struggles indicate that. He's perfectly capable of hitting a free throw, but there's something between his ears that is stopping him from being able to do it.
I did like the story of how he used to drive Ray Allen nuts. You know, Ray Allen has, you know, a free throw routine that he basically grooved in the first or second year that he came into the league, and it's barely changed the whole time. And, you know, he does it at training. He does it, you know, he can do it in his sleep, basically. And LeBron used to, if something wasn't working in game, he'd totally change his routine in game, stand at a different place, you know, bounce the ball six times instead of one. And really, he used to drive Ray Allen up the fucking wall.
And he's been doing that even more in the last year or two. I mean, there's like 15 different variants on his free throw technique. Anyway, people didn't tune in to hear fucking free throw chat. Should we run through what's happened this week? The first thing that happened this week was that the Sixers and the Celtics. Celta de Vigo are a team in northern Spain. Ironically, they probably share historical ethnicity with Boston Celtic and Glasgow Celtic, because Celta does mean Celtic. But The Sixers and the Celtics swapped picks and traded some shit, basically because the Sixers really liked the look of Markelle Fultz at number one, and the Celts did not necessarily have that much interest in Markelle Fultz, who was a point guard out of some college that neither of us ever watched play.
whose coach got fired the minute their season finished, and
who knows?
I just find the more and more I find out about college basketball, the more distasteful I find it.
It's a fucking fraud. It's a pyramid scheme.
Not only that, but did you hear the story about Rick Pitino's college this week? So they lost. They had to take down a championship banner because the year that whatever college he coaches won a championship
Louisville.
Banner.
Yeah.
The year that class came in, they brought in a whole heap of high school students into the college, had this party, introduced a bunch of strippers, and the assistant coaches ran in handing condoms around to all the high schoolers and said, go crazy, and then ran out.
That's pretty much what always happens everywhere. And, of course, if they could just pay these people, none of this would be necessary. None of it.
Yeah.
It's just absolute fucking rubbish. And Pitino has always been a crook. He was a crook when he was an NBA coach. He's always been dodge.
Well, you know how pro coach I am, and I just find it abhorrent that coaches are making $7 or $8 million a year while players are making nothing.
Players are starving, basically.
Yeah, that's right. You know. No. Don't like that at all.
So the Sixers-Celtics trade was sort of held up as this great moment of claimed victory for all the Hinkie stands, the people of the Sam Hinkie truthers have been claiming that he was a martyr for the process, quote unquote. And you think, okay, good on you boys. At least you get your little moment of joy out the way. They did this thing called. Were you part of this? They did a thing called. Like RT Mageddon, where they went out and tried to retweet everybody who'd ever said something mean about the way Hinkie had been asked or whatever. And I'd said something along the lines of I said something in reply to Zach Lowe or something to say the Ponzi scheme rolls on. And I got RT'd by a couple of them, and someone said, this guy is impersonating a doctor on the internet. And I said, actually, I'm a gynecologist, but this is my lunch hour, which is an old Monty Python line, and he got it. So therefore, I managed to defuse that one. But it's kind of...
Well, but the one thing I will give props to the... because, you know, I did see your Ponzi scheme one. And
that's
and
an old
the Celtics,
one. That's years ago.
The Celtics are sort of running a Ponzi scheme at the moment where they're refusing to turn their picks into an actual asset.
Yeah.
But at least you can say Philly... I realise it's a different front office, but I think this was Hinkie's actual end game is you stockpile the picks so that when you find the guy you think is the guy, you can present a package that the other person can't say no to.
Yeah.
And they've actually put a line in the sand and said, right, we are moving forward now. We've got Embiid, Fultz and Simmons and
we have no idea how they're going to share the ball.
No, but they got
Saric. They're all ball hogs, so this could be a
lot
of fun.
My theory of paying Patty Mills to come there is like an even better one now because he is a guy that can work without the ball. Like he can cut and spot up and shoot threes. Great veteran guy, and they've got fucking shitloads of money that they can pay him. They can pay him way above what the market probably will because...
And they've got Brett Brown, who knows him.
And that's right. And plus he makes, they signed, they drafted another Aussie
they
kid
drafted,
as well.
They drafted Bruce Bolden's kid. Bolden and Dave Simmons used to mark each other. They played against each other in the NBL back in the early 90s.
Did you see that?
The kids are going to play together, which is kind of cool.
Did you see that fantastic screenshot that the NBL... tweeted out.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. 93.
The Channel 10. Yeah. Yeah, with the profile matchups, you know, before the game. I thought that brought flashbacks back to me. I probably watched that game back in the day. Because that was like the peak of when I was watching local basketball. So,
So Philly have gone very Australian. So Utah have to sign, have to retain to Joe Inglis and keep Dante and
well, I think they've signed two Aussies to their summer league side. So they have retaliated and retaliated hard.
Yep. And they're already in green and gold. So, you know, they've at least got that advantage. They've at least got that advantage. Yeah, I mean, Danny Ainge is still kicking the can down the road in terms of when he actually wants to make a decision. And it's all well and good having all these picks to package up and make a deal, but what kind of dude do they want to do a deal for? I mean, how is Kevin Love or Jimmy Butler or Paul George not a good enough dude to have a crack at? What caliber of player are they hoping to get with this package?
Which brings us to one of the more fucking... I just find it insane that the Cavs essentially fired their front office 2 days before the draft. So
not the Cavs, just Dan fucking Gilbert, Comic Sans man, the loan forecloser, the Trump endorser, the Republican National Convention host, the greatest cunt in the history of cunts, apart from all the others.
If you're the Celtics, right? Butler's gone. He's gone out of the East.
He's not available. Yeah.
Like I'm thinking more. I'm thinking conferences here, right? Butler's.
Or
gone.
In terms of his strength. Well, you'd argue whether the even if he was still on Chicago, that Chicago team wasn't worrying you too much because they were going.
No, the Chicago team wasn't worrying you. But if he'd gone to Cleveland, he might have been a little bit more of a handful because I think he would be an awesome third player on a good side.
Yeah. And the thing about Butler is that he said, look, I think I'd rather just be a player. I don't want to be the franchise.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because kind of plays into the idea that maybe he's not worth a franchise player's worth of kit. And maybe that actually was closer to value than a lot of fucking screaming talking heads like fucking Bill Simmons were pouting about. But continue.
So he's gone. Paul George is essentially gone. Like, even if he plays this season for Indiana, he's like, you know, he's mentally out the door. Like, he's not going to do much.
He's a year away, if he's not away now.
Who knows what the Raptors are going to be? Cleveland looks like they might even blow it up. Like, who knows? If LeBron gives the word that he's going to LA to, you know, basically transition into his business retirement, then...
Which there's no evidence for other than the fact that he owns a home there and some of his mates live there.
And they do... He does have that media thing that he's started with a couple of other players that is kicking off, like...
Yeah, but the thing about the internet is you don't have to be in LA.
I'm not entirely sold, but look, Dan Gilbert's given him a wonderful opportunity because he could leave and you would have to be the most hardcore Cavs apologist to blame LeBron for leaving the Cavs. He's won them a championship.
You'd have to be the whitest man in Cleveland. You'd have to be Dan Gilbert. Yes, you guarantee right. there'll be another Comic Sans letter. Well, that's the thing is that apparently he has this very kind of folksy, down-home, fucking Disney World management culture, but he also has massive management turnover. He treats people like he infantilizes them, but he also doesn't retain them. That's his management culture in his business in Quicken Loans as much as it is at the Cavs. So he's never actually retained any general manager that has worked for the Cavs. They've all left or not been renewed.
While he's
owned the fucking joint.
What is it? 9 or 10 coaches since LeBron's been drafted.
Yeah, but part of that's been because the performance has been shit out.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because the general managers have been shit out, and
I don't know. I just look at and then the other one
it's a fucking shambles, which is ironic because they were second in the entire NBA last year, and they could have won more than one game against the greatest team that we've ever seen assembled. So they're not that, you know, somehow they're not that far away. And I don't understand how they're not that far away because they should be a lot further away than they are.
So getting back to my original point, which is that the Celtics have a like that, them and Washington could basically rule the East. You know, I guess it sort of depends on how Philly develops. But even if best
even
case
Washington,
scenario,
I mean,
yeah, like they're not that deep.
But they haven't reloaded. They haven't reloaded, have they? I mean, they've still got. This is not the same. I mean, like we said weeks ago, they are kind of like Portland East. You know, they've got a fantastic shooting backcourt, but the rest of it's a bit of a shambles. You know, the rest of it's kind of
thin.
Patches and bits and leftovers and stuff like that.
So, you know, if you could, like, I guess their weight, like if they score Hayward, then they're just going to dominate the East for a couple of years because that's going to be a really good side in the East.
Yeah, Hayward's all right.
He's all right, but...
Hayward's a bit like Butler. He's all right. He's fine. But I just don't know whether he's the dude who tips you over the top.
I guess the point is not so much that he's this absolute gun. You know, he's not Kawhi Leonard or he's not Westbrook or that. But who else is there in the East? Like,
I'll tell you who: the Charlotte Hornets. Now that they've added Dwight Howard.
No. Well, that's the other thing. Atlanta look like they're. You know, there's another one gone. Atlanta's doing a rebuild.
The New York Knickerbockers. With all the players they get when they trade Porzingis.
Zingas, that's right. I can't wait to see where he gets traded. I really hope he's not good at this, is he?
He's really, really not good at this general manager stuff. In the era of social media, whereby previously when he'd made some fuck-off stupid comment, it would just fade into the ether. But now it just hangs around and bites him in the ass forever and ever and ever.
So,
I mean, the only justification for deliberately unsettling your franchise player by saying we'll listen to offers is because you secretly know he's stress fractured and crocked. But if he is, then you don't talk about it in the press because that makes people ask questions about it.
Yeah, and he's still got to go through medicals. Like that happened to the Rockets guy that got signed by the
Monty
Nets.
Monty Ennis, yeah.
Yeah, failed the medicals and they sent him back.
Yeah.
No, not the Nets. It was.
He did go to the. No, I think it was the Nets.
No, I think he ended up at the Nets, but he went to. It was Chicago that signed him to a restricted free agent deal, and then he failed his medical. Okay, so I just want to riff off one of the more stupid arguments this week, which is Dave McMiniman's tweet about the franchise changing players.
That was months ago. That was months ago.
That was 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
It was a week ago.
Was the actual tweet a week ago?
It was a long time ago. No, that was a long time ago.
It only blew up like 3 or 4 days ago, though.
It was longer than that. It was quite a while ago.
It was after last week's
last
pod, though.
Year. Dave McMenamin tweeted this thing about who players that he would start a franchise with. Dave McMenamin.
No,
it was players he would start a franchise with. That's the point of the argument.
That's what he tried to clarify it as, but that's not what he tweeted. That
so we're arguing about semantics of a tweet from fucking 6 days ago.
There's a big difference. Anyway, I want to forget all that.
I want to forget it too. Can we move on real quick? Because this is content that's not going to interest anybody. Arguing about the semantics of a dude who nobody who listens to this fucking podcast has heard from.
No. My point is you can argue all you want about franchise-changing players, right? But what the NBA must hate is incompetent franchises. Because if you look at a guy like Porzingis or Anthony Davis or... even Carl Anthony Towns, but I think the Wolves are pretty competently run now. But definitely the Knicks and the Pelicans. Like you look at Anthony Davis, how long has he been there? 7 years, and he's widely regarded as one of the best players running around in the NBA. But they have totally failed to surround him with anything that looks like a team that matches. And I'm not saying just talent, but like talent that actually works within his skill set. Like they haven't really, and that's because they're incompetent. They don't have a very good front office. Their training staff are NFL guys. They've had not that great coaches. Is their current coach a good coach? Who knows? Because their front office can't put any fucking players on the floor that are decent. They keep having players that are injured. Now is that just pure bad luck or is that their training staff? But do you see my point? Like, have we really maximized Anthony Davis's potential. And
so your position is that some teams are worse than others, which is the case in every league, in every competition. Yes. You can't have 30 competent teams in any competition.
You can't.
There's always going to be some that are better than others.
Definitely you can have some better than others, but take Sacramento, right, which have been a punchline for us for 3 years, 4 years.
They've been a punchline for everyone since Chris Webber left.
Yeah. Okay. So they've been the punchline for the last couple of years since Vivek bought the side with the, you know, 5-on-4 and him and his relatives taking Stauskas in the draft and, you know, all sorts of absolute amateur hour bullshit. This year, they hire a guy as assistant GM who's an absolute fucking cap nerd, and surprisingly to everybody, they listened to him and they drafted smartly. Now, can they maintain the momentum and not go out and buy a bunch of dumb free agents and actually suck this year and get another good draft pick next year and actually build?
That depends on whether they let Vivek out of the broom cupboard.
That's
Has
right.
anybody it's, heard it's, from him?
No.
Seriously, this is a serious question. Point. Has anybody heard from Vivek in the past 3 months?
That's the other thing.
Apparently there is a behind the scenes arm wrestle going on because the second biggest shareholder is kind of maneuvering to try and make a takeover. But it hasn't seemed to have affected their front office since this draft. So they drafted well. Everything else they do is terrible still. But
the thing is, they've got a good coach, you know.
They've got a decent coach.
I wouldn't say he's, you know, top level, but would you rather have him or Doc Rivers?
Doc Rivers.
Really? As a coach?
Because you get his son for free. I don't think Doc Rivers is a bad coach.
Yeah,
I think Doc Rivers is a very good coach. I think Doc Rivers is a fucking awful GM. Mm. But I think Doc Rivers is still what he's good at is being a coach.
And now
he doesn't have to be the GM
very quickly
because he's got Jerry fucking Logo West. As we said last week, they've finally got a logo that doesn't suck. There isn't clip art. And I am reusing my jokes, and I don't give a fuck. Eat my ass. Eat it.
Who said that in a tweet? Wasn't that Fox's dad that said, my son ate Lonzo's balls ass?
Good link because he was, because the Sacramento got him. And one of the reasons they really fell in love with him was because he said, yeah, I'll come to Sacramento. Yeah, no problem at all. Cool. I like Sacramento. I'm looking forward to it. Sounds great. And they went, what? You fucking what? You want to come here? Why? I mean, they'll be good. I mean, but why? So they were never going to pick anybody else other than De'Aaron Fox. And in the game that De'Aaron Fox's team and Lonzo Ball's team played, Fox did actually kick his ass, or as Fox's dad said, eat his ass up.
not the same thing.
It's a different sort of thing.
I don't know what they do down there in Sacramento, but everyone's consenting adults.
It sounds like it's a Pacific West thing. It's fine. Enjoy yourself. Great. What else happened? What else should we mention? Oh yeah, because we've been following the fortunes of this young lad who came over and played for Adelaide in the ANBL instead of playing in college or anything like that. So he got paid instead of not being paid and having to live off, you know, fucking 2-minute noodles at college. And he went all right. He got drafted by the
OKC.
OKC. It was OKC at about 17, 18, wasn't it?
Did you see the twist in this one? He's a massive Golden State and Steph Curry fan.
Yeah, but everybody is. Everybody is.
A couple of the Golden State beat writers were like, oh, that's going to be a very interesting first training session with Russell Westbrook. It won't be. It's just a joke.
I mean, the annual pulling out of the old tweets just gets boring and stupid. Mm. And the best one was the dude who tweeted about the size of his dick in his pants when he was probably about 14.
Yeah, Dennis Smith.
Dennis Smith is talking about the Woody's rocking. It's like, yeah, this is ridiculous. Ridiculous. But so he the argument was that he didn't really raise his draft stock by going to Australia, but he probably didn't hurt his draft stock by going to Australia, and he might have developed himself a little bit better. The question, of course, is that, I mean, we had this discussion on Twitter, and we won't fucking relitigate it now, but how would a prospect who is higher ceiling, lower floor go, in given that the Australian league is very well developed, very well coached, very well analysed, versus going to a league where you can hide your flaws a little bit better because it's not that well scattered, like China, for example?
This is the thing. I don't actually think Australia or any overseas league.
Australia. Fucking.
Is good for those sort of players. I think it is perfect for the Ferguson type players, though. And as I was having a bit of a chat with Steve Smith on message about whether or not he'd do a bit more media on Philly this year, considering the amount of Australians, and he pointed out that
Steve Smith, who occasionally contributes to ESPN.com, freelance basketball journalist, not the Australian cricket captain, not the former wide receiver, not the former basketball player, not the former Labor minister. What other Stephen Smiths do we know? Not Nigel Mansell's rival in Formula 3 Britain in the early 80s.
He pointed out that the NBA have linked up with, I think, the Institute of Sport and are actually starting like a, I don't know, I think they're sending high schoolers over here for camps and stuff like that to run through the Institute of Sport, which is really interesting. And I wondered whether the NBL would send out a couple of scouts to watch high school games and target a particular demographic of player, like, you know, those real grinders that have got a bit of talent, but real grinders that would be quite happy to come to Australia and become a professional and sit on the bench and learn and get smashed in training. And, you know, the fact that he got laid out his first, I don't know if you saw that story, but that, you know, he came to his first training session and the Adelaide captain basically smashed him in a pick on the first training session. And, you know, he just went, what the fuck?
That just sounded like usual fucking bogan Australian bullshit that was, you know, let's rough up the new kid. And then it was post hoc justified as, oh, we all did it just to make him a better player. But in reality, they were just trying to smash the little superstar, which is, you know, let's not call that any kind of strategy. Let's call it what it is. It's the usual Australian attitude to outsiders.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree.
I know you don't agree. I don't care. That's my view.
Yeah, I know, but in coaching situations where you get young guys that have never played under, like I've done it, mate, you can laugh all you like, but if you've got young guys that have never played under a certain standard of pressure, when you go and actually play against an opposition that aren't your mates, that don't give a fuck about you, and you haven't prepared those young kids properly, then you're not doing your job as a coach or a teammate.
Yeah, but it doesn't take any particular talent to smash someone in a pick. It just takes you, you know, basically that he just smashed him because he could. Because he had an authority above him, which was fine.
You can do that, but don't
pretend that it was any kind of fucking overarching genius. It was just, you smashed him. Good on you. Put him in his place. That's fine.
You're not putting him in his place. What you're doing is actually helping him prepare for his first professional game, because the guy on the other side will smash you 10 times as hard because he doesn't give a fuck about you. And the thing is, in college, they don't have that level of physicality because they're all worried about how well they look. That's a noted thing about college sports, and he would not get that in practice at college. He definitely wouldn't get it in practice, and he probably wouldn't get it in games. You young players, you have to try and prepare them, especially if they've come up from like schoolboys or something like that into playing. Like you see it repeated in cricket, and in fact that was one of the big down points on the 20s for the NRL compared to the Queensland Cup or, you know, Sydney grade, was that they're playing against a whole bunch of other players that have never had that physical presence. Because if you're a 28-year-old guy that's never going to play in the NRL, sometimes all you've got is that grinding physicality that's keeping you in that next level down. You know, you don't have the talent. So like it's really hard to prepare them for it. And some of the young guys I coached this year in the NTL, like there's one particular Sydney side that is known for that hard-assed, real physical style of play. It's not illegal. They're a real brutal. They play a real brutal style. It's very direct and straight up the middle. And I tried to prep them.
How do you
in the
play brutally in touch football? With lots of picks and running through people and
no, it's lots
them
of
really hard.
It's touching them really hard. It's about your body position, but it's also about closing down the space a lot quicker. So, you know, if you're rucking the ball, you expect to sort of take X amount of steps before someone touches you. So these guys get up really quick and close the space down and make you fit. Their whole game plan is to make you feel uncomfortable, to make you feel like you haven't got enough space. And that forces mistakes. And there's a bit of niggle and stuff included in it as well, like it's that whole package. And their franchise has had that forever. And it's really hard to explain. And these young guys just got smashed and they were dropping balls. They would never normally drop for their skill level. And I said to them afterwards, like, you've experienced it now. Next year you come back, it's not going to be as bad, because no matter how much I try and talk to you about it, I can't really replicate it at training, because the guys at training are all your mates and these guys aren't your mates, and there's a different level of attitude towards the physical play that you just don't get at training. And that's why I actually, like, I know you're very critical of the Adelaide captain, but I actually think he's doing
the right
thing.
No, I'm not critical
of
him. I just don't think you should claim intellectual superiority when all you did was smash a dude. And it wasn't a plan. It was just, I'm just going to smash you because you're a cocky little shit and you're annoying me.
No, I don't think so. I think it's absolutely a plan. It's absolutely a senior player helping a young player get ready for the physicality of the league.
What have you got in your mouth?
Dessert, sorry.
This is what I have to work with.
What? We don't have sponsors? We don't have anyone to keep happy?
No, I've got a beer that expired in 2010. Didn't realise that was going to be how it worked. Look, on the plus side,
that's your New Zealand bottle shops.
No, you sent one over that was from 2010. It was nice to see your Phoenix Suns drafted Josh Jackson, and it's nice to see Pacey getting a gig. I hadn't heard from him much since he left Dawson's Creek.
Very nice.
I assume you used to play the Dawson's Creek drinking game like everybody else?
No, I wasn't a big Dawson's Creek fan.
No, neither was I, but we used to watch it in the flat, and we used to play the Dawson's Creek drinking game, which basically involved every time a teenager says something that a teenager would never say, drink.
So how long before you had to call the ambulance?
Second ad break, usually. No, that's why I now have a liver that has its own armor plating. It's because of that. And we were all very disappointed to know that Kawhi didn't actually shave off his braids.
Mm.
That was it was fake news. That was really disappointing.
I do want him to go full Ben Wallace fro in a game, though.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I want to see
like All-Star or something.
And
like
I want
that.
To see LeBron fucking shaving hair, big beard, just looking like a motherfucking, just a badass.
Like a preacher.
Yeah, no, just going out killing people. The only thing we need to mention is that the free agency stuff has started. CP3 and Blake have both opted out, or are both going to opt out. Of course,
RIP the Clippers.
Well, the Clippers can still offer them more money, but that doesn't necessarily mean the Clippers want to offer them more money or they want to accept that money.
But I think the reading between the lines from what I saw is if they were going to take that money, they would opt out and take the money, like almost in the same breath. It sounds like they're both
going. I don't think they can. I don't think officially you can announce that you have until the 1st of July.
Yeah, but I think you opt out really close to the 1st of July. Like, opting out now is seen more as a, let's go and have a look what the market says.
Well, who was it who opted out so early that it actually got, it was, no, so opted in. It was Wade who opted in Chicago. He opted in so early that he...
he's like, I'm getting those checks,
he opted
bitch.
In a week early, even before Jimmy Butler was out the door.
Actually,
and it kind of gives him the... Not the moral authority, but it gives the kind of first mover advantage in the negotiations. Mm. He's like, well, I'm here.
I've started following his wife because she is fucking hilarious. So when he opted in, a few people were a bit critical of him for opting in, and he's tweeting out these, you know, replies saying, you know, if I was making these numbers and I was 26, I'd be on a $150 million contract.
Exactly right,
like
yeah.
And his wife goes, oh, so now you've got time to talk about shit, have you? She's throwing shade at him for, like, debating people on Twitter. It was quite funny.
They are both awesome and excellent yeah. people, and I wish them both really well. They're both bloody tremendous.
They've got a self-awareness, I think, is...
Oh, because Wade, we talked about this last week, but Wade's Instagram post about LeBron going bald was just so beautifully done. It was the sort of thing you couldn't get some intern or some PR person to do. It was entirely, I'm going to wind up my mate here. And it doesn't matter that we both earn hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm just going to wind up my man. And it was very, very good.
Yeah.
I think in the next little while, for as long as there's still a chance the Celts are going to go for Porzingis, I suppose, even though they've already drafted. They've got that package and all that sort of stuff. I think, obviously, your draft picks are worth less when you're 364 days from the next draft, but I suppose that's the only circumstance in which the Knicks actually deal Porzingis, which means that, in the end, Porzingis ends up coming back to the Knicks in a circumstance where he's been undermined and Phil thinks he wins and in reality he fucking doesn't because all he's done is piss down the dude's leg. But I do notice that hashtag don't trade Porzingis is becoming the new hashtag Wenger out. It's fucking everywhere. It was on a billboard in Times Square. It's going to be in completely arbitrary places that make no sense for basically the next 3 months.
But this is my point, is I want him to be traded. That the dude could be, you know, he could be the next Dirk Nowitzki. Like, this is the thing.
So you want him to go and play on an irrelevant Western Conference team instead of an irrelevant Eastern Conference team?
Hey, he won a ring, but like...
He did, but that was an accident and it would never happen again.
No, I don't know whether it was an accident. That was a damn good team.
I know,
like, that
but
more,
it was a Leicester City.
Yes, that's right. It was a golden moment.
Yeah, and that actually undermines a bit Leicester City because... Leicester City won over 38 rounds in a home and away series. So it's still that kind of same idea.
Yeah, they beat some damn good teams that year. They beat Kobe, they beat, you know, the big three of the Heat. Like,
they played really well.
But my point is, if Dirk had ended up with a crap owner at the start of his career, he might have bounced around. Like, I actually think that you wouldn't have got the career that he had without Cuban. Because, you know, Cuban basically realized that he was a superstar and just did whatever he had to try and surround him. Now, I'm not saying every move they made was right, but I actually wish my sons had someone like Cuban, because Nash
you
had
just
a couple
wish
of...
You didn't have someone like Harbour, because he's fucking useless cunt. Sava,
yeah. Well, that's the point. Like, that they traded Joe Johnson. Because they wanted to save cap. They sold draft picks because they wanted to save cash. They had a really gun player and they really cheaped out on maximizing the chances of him winning a ring. And that's a little bit disappointing. Like, you got to throw when you've got one of those players, you got to throw all your chips on the table, which is why as much as I don't really fucking like the Celtics, I would love to see Porzingis go there and play for Stevens, because I think Stevens would turn him into a gun.
No, I want to keep seeing the Celtics fail. That will continue to make me happy.
Well, I think the East has got a lot easier, so it's going to be a bit harder.
Well, it's kind of the net migration of stars westward is exactly what we predicted wouldn't happen.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
I mean, but it's granted, Jimmy Butler didn't really have a lot of say in the matter, but it's still, still.
But it's that the funny thing is, though, because you're in the West, like, it's not like the Timberwolves have a choice to move their whole franchise back to the East.
But if you look at where Minnesota is on a map. It's further east than New Orleans.
Yeah, I realize that, but, like, you know, if you're Minnesota and you want to make the finals, like, all those teams aren't going away. The only choice you have is to get better. So that's like the West is like this constant arms race where, you know, one side makes moves to get better to beat the gun side in the West, and then they become the gun side, and then the next side has to make moves to beat the gun. Yeah, it's like self-perpetuating.
You wouldn't be out of place saying the Timberwolves won't make the playoffs next year because, A, you've taken away a lot of their outside shooting. B, they're going to take a while to learn what they're doing. And C, look at the fucking competition.
Yeah.
They could very easily finish 10th and still have it, you know, just, you know, finish 500 and finish 10th. And, yeah, that's what you get.
Yep. Meanwhile, like, I'm struggling to think who will be the fifth best side in the East. Because a whole heap of last year's final sides.
Miami.
Like Miami might be the fourth or fifth best side in the East next year.
Miami would have been the best team in all of basketball based on their second half of last year. If you saw that they were on like fucking 60-something win pace last year.
That's why I really, really want Blake Griffin to go there. Because, I want him to go somewhere where they have a good medical staff and they're going to maximize his potential, because I really don't feel like the Clippers have maximized his potential. I feel like they've made him play hurt when they shouldn't have, and he's not, or brought him back too quick. I realize him punching his mate in the face isn't really a Clippers problem, but
no, but he breaks often, and I don't necessarily think that's down to the staff. I think he just might be a dude who breaks easily.
Well, this is the thing that I'm really interested to see if he goes to Miami. Like, if he goes to Miami and has three, you know, 78-game seasons plus finals, then Borman's going to be looking at his training staff going, what the fuck were you guys doing? He looks like he's taken control of his franchise too. Don't you get that feeling?
Yeah.
That he's taken a couple of years to sort of get the feel of how the business works, and now he's starting to make his own decisions.
Yeah, he's put the biggest thing was resting back GM powers off Doc, and he's just done that. So
yeah,
you know, that was the most awkward part of the whole exchange, and he's done that.
Well, there's one team. Like, if they lose Chris and Blake, actually, there was a really funny tweet from someone today about DeAndre Jordan being like, and there was a photo of, I think it was the Fresh Prince of Bel Air with Will Smith standing in an empty house going, where the fuck's everybody gone? Going, this is what DeAndre feels like right now.
Yeah. Well, the other one I saw was him sitting at the end of the bench just looking askance at CP3 and Blake saying, why didn't you fuckers just leave me in Texas two years ago? Why didn't you just let me do my thing?
That's right.
Because he'd be on the Mavs right now. I mean, he would have had a shit season last year, but
Well, yeah, who knows? Because they would have retooled around him a little bit, like how they're retooling around Harrison Barnes. And
they would have missed the playoffs because they just don't have enough stuff. You know, they're like there's a whole bunch of teams in that space, and they just don't have enough stuff.
Yep. Should we talk Le Mans? I don't want to leave that out because
a lot happened.
A lot happened. The riding bikes down hills happened last weekend, and I don't think we'll get to that this week because I think we're going to be pressed.
Are you sure it happened last week? Because I saw there was a link saying that it was this week.
Yeah, no, so this is the new thing. They have like a European section. So they have a race in France and a race in Switzerland 1 week apart.
Okay.
So I guess everyone flies out because, you know, a whole heap of the riders are probably two-thirds of the riders would be Canadians and Americans. So they all fly out to Europe, race twice, and then go home, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. We got like a doubleheader. So Le Mans was basically penciled in for Toyota. They broke the qualifying lap record, the one that was, like we said last week, the one that was set by a dude in a 5-litre Porsche in 1970 when there were no chicanes. So they broke that qualifying lap record and they were just pissing off into the lead, first and second. And then they weren't. And I just want to tell you a couple of stories about this. first of all, was car 7, which was the lead Toyota during a safety car period, came into the pits. And when you have a safety car period, you do your pit stop, and then you go to the end of pit lane and you wait for the safety car train to come around. They went to the end of pit lane, was waiting. A dude who was racing for one of the LMP2 teams was a big fan, so he was a mate of one of the drivers. So he bonded across the pit lane because he'd just gotten out of his car, and he just gave a thumbs up to the driver. Driver took off, and then quickly was flagged down by the pit crew. The reason he took off was that this guy from the LMP2 team, their colours are orange and black, which is exactly the same colours as the Marshals. No. So basically, he launched and had to stop, and had to be held again by the pit crew, by the Marshals at the end of pit lane, and then had to go again. So basically, when it came to start the race again, to come out of the safety car period, the fucking thing didn't work. The clutch was blown, and he dribbled around with no gears and eventually died out the back of the circuit. Because his clutch had been blown by the launch, hold that he'd had to do. There was a whole lot of people demanding an apology from this dude who'd waved to his mate. The reality is, build a fucking clutch that will last more than two launches, maybe. It's an endurance race. So that happened.
Yeah.
There was another thing. One of the LMP2 teams, the one that had Ayrton Senna's nephew and Alain Prost's son racing for it, they were having a pretty good day, except for the fact that they couldn't start the car at pit stops. So what they thought they'd do was they drilled a hole. So what happened was that
this is the one I wanted to bring
in. In the pit stops, they figured out, oh, we can't get it started. So they pulled the engine cover off. They basically, really high-tech solution, hit the starter motor with a hammer, and that would get it to go. You get like a screwdriver and a hammer, and you can make a starter motor go. This is like Bush mechanics. Like this is Kingswood shit. This is shit that you can use to get your daddo to work.
I grew up, we used to have a little beach shack across, basically across the water off Gladstone on a big island. And I used to drive, homemade built beach buggies and shit like that. And this is the sort of shit that we used to do on weekends.
And it also works on a 300,000 euro 600 horsepower fucking sports car. But here's the problem. They have to make like a pit stop every 35 minutes. It's a 24-hour race. You have to pull off that engine cover a lot of times. So they thought, right, what we'll do, we'll drill a little hole in the engine cover so we can poke the screwdriver in, hit it with the hammer every time that comes into the pits. That's fine, except somewhere towards the end of the race, they figured out, oh shit, we're not allowed to make modifications to the bodywork. It's an unhomologated aerodynamic change. So we need to fix that before the end of the race. But they never actually did it. All they did was stick some tape over it, some race tape over it. They didn't do it. So they were busted trying to do that in Parc Fermé, which is the kind of sealed off area after the race. Yeah. And they got disqualified even though they'd finished third. All because they hadn't taped up their little fucking starter motor hole.
Does that mean Jackie Chan came second and third?
Jackie Chan came second and third with their team, which is awesome. And New Zealand's Earl Bamber and Brendan Hartley, who grew up paddock bashing on the farm together at age 6 and 7 and 8, up in sort of Whanganui. That part of New Zealand, won the Le Mans 24 Hour despite being down 18 laps after the first 3 hours. I've never seen a comeback like that in my life.
And is that simply because there was no other Class 1 cars on the circuit, but so they're just that much faster than
the other
cars?
But they had to go like fucking hell for the for the entire, from hour 3 through to hour...
They passed them at the start of the
last hour, and still put another lap on them before the end of the final hour.
I guess the problem with that is too that if they're going hell for leather, then the car's much more likely to break.
Exactly right. The number one car wasn't being stretched, and it blew the fuck up all by itself with no particular pressure on it.
Mm.
All it had to do was finish, and it didn't. Although the number one car's crew were saying, we actually do need to press it a little bit because the drivetrain is not designed to just be not operated to its fullest extent.
That was the thing that surprised me. And this is one of the things that I used to really like about Top Gear, for all their buffoonery and stupid jokes. But they occasionally would present a bit of information to you that you would just never find out. And that was when, I think it was Hammond, took one of the old McLarens out on a test, took it out on a test track. And, you know, I think the thing was that one of those idiots always said, oh, you know, Formula One's fucking easy, you know, the car drives itself, it's got that much technology in it. So he took it out on a test run, and the pit crew are like, dude, you're going too slow. The tyres won't work unless you're going at 150 kilometres an hour. Not going to work.
Yeah, he did that. Well, he's actually tested Fernando Alonso's 05 championship winning car, I think.
Yeah.
Could not get the pace into it. He couldn't get the heat into it to make it work.
Yeah, so it's sliding all over the fucking place because he's not getting the tyres warm enough to grip the road. And he's like, I'm just not comfortable enough driving this car at this pace.
Yeah, I can't push it enough to make it react properly.
And that really sort of opened my eyes a little bit in the fact that a lot of these cars are not built to be driven like the car you and I drive on the road. They're built to be driven at this really high pace and really hard, and driving them like I drive my fucking truck to work every day. It just doesn't work.
Well, don't weave on the straights to get warmth into the tyres and sort of dive in, bang it down a couple of gears?
I do weave going up my driveway because it's all washed out, but that's not quite the same thing.
Excitement and wonder.
So it was really funny. This is what I find fascinating about Twitter, is following a sport that I'm not watching. I've never watched a second of Le Mans footage. Like I've watched highlights and stuff, but I've never watched any of it live. But I just found it, especially you and Bernie's back and forth and a couple of other people, just fascinating. Like the tactics, the way the race was playing out, the fact that there was a chance that the second division guys might win the race, you know, that the charge at the last minute. It was really compelling, and I find it interesting that these niche sports, or not even niche sports, like look at the NBA, but the correct use of social media and the fact that people are interested can add a lot of depth to a sport.
Well, 20 years ago, the only way we could find out what was happening at Le Mans was to read about it in a specialist magazine 2 weeks afterwards.
Like a month later.
But now you can follow it in real time. And the whole point is it's a drama that plays out in real time. It's this... Mm. And every time you think it's settled, something fucked up happens. I mean, for a lot of the last 10 hours, it was a whole lot of calculator bashing, trying to work out, can Bambatandy Bernard actually run these guys down, or are we going to have an LMP1 winner? And then once that was settled in the final hour, it was the battle for the GT Pro, which came down to the last lap, and the Corvette guys did their own kind of interpretive dance tribute to Toyota by flailing to a pathetic halt on the final lap and somehow managed to drag it over the line and get third. But you don't there's a drama to it that just isn't the stakes are high because people get to, you know, if you've bought into it from the start, then you buy into it all the way through.
Well, and the other thing is that there's no flag. The realization of that just blew my mind, that no one crosses the finish line. It's just like, whoop, 24 hours is up, you're the winner.
Well, no, you're in front. Well, it's not, because 24 hours go up, but then you've still got to finish the lap you're on before you get the flag.
Ah, right. And so does everybody have to finish their lap after the 24 hours?
Everyone has to finish their lap after the winner finishes their lap.
So you could blow your car up after the 24 hours and still not be classed as a finisher.
Well, that's almost what happened to the Corvette guys, because they, so with about, I think it was the third last lap, they were in the lead, and the Aston guys were chasing them down, and the Aston guys had a big dive into the hairpin at Mulsanne. They banged wheels and continued, but later on the second to last lap, the Corvette ended up jumping the chicane because it was having, it had a slow puncture on both tires on that particular side of the car. And when they got to the final chicane on the second to last lap, the thing had no pace at all. And then it got mugged by, the thing started coming apart and it lost its front tire and it got beaten. It got mugged for first and then mugged for second and finally dragged it around. But if it hadn't finished that last lap, it wouldn't have been classified third. It wouldn't have been classified at all.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, so I don't know whether I'd, like, 24 hours is a lot of time to spend on a sport for a guy with three young kids.
Well, the thing is, with Twitter, you don't even, you can just sort of...
Yeah, like, it was a great Twitter sport to follow because, you know, I'm like, I literally was checking in all the time, like... I had you and Bernie on a little, you know, like I just basically search for you and search for Bernie and just read those tweets to see what was happening in the race.
I think Bernie did it unbroken. I think he stayed up for the whole thing.
Nah, I thought he had a nap somewhere.
I think he might have napped in the afternoon, but yeah. Because it's the race starts at 1:00. I usually watch maybe the first hour and then get some kip in and then. I don't know. I think I saw the last 14 or thereabouts, I think. But
it is part of his employment. So
well, I don't think that he covers that in his gig. But thinking about endurance motorsport is that it never ends. I mean, this weekend there's the 6 hours of Paul Ricard, which is a GT3 race. So that's like the Bathurst 12-hour. It's the same series basically as the Bathurst 12-hour. It's the warm up for the 24 hours of Spa, which is the big GT3 race in Europe, and that happens at the end of next month. And also there's a VLN race at the Nürburgring. So there's quite a lot of stuff. You know, it's only a week after, and it's and it just never fucking ends.
Mm.
It never ends, man.
So just before we wrap, I will real quickly touch on the riding bikes downhill because...
This is the touching sound. I'm touching
So, and this is a little bit what I find frustrating about mountain biking is
there aren't any engines.
Yeah.
I just had like a 250cc single sort of bolted into the frame and maybe some bark busters and a fucking, and some mud guards. You wore a helmet.
So, it's a little bit insular, the sport. So, there's a couple of magazines that report on it, and obviously Crankworx do their own promotional stuff, but there's not all the more independent journalists commenting. You know, you don't have your Peter Laylors and your Dan Bredigs and your Jared Kimbers sort of offering up theories about what's happening.
There's not a lot of voices outside the tent, is what you're saying.
No. And maybe there are, and I just haven't found them yet. That could be a
They'd probably be bloggy online type voices, though. I mean, given there's not a lot of barrier to
entry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all you have to do is watch it on the fucking internet and spit your opinions. Why don't you start one? You've got lots of time.
yeah, that's true. So anyway,
we got lots of takes. You know, effectively, this is a podcast about Crankworx in part.
Yeah, I like to give him a shout. I like promoting any sport that we're interested in. So Seminuk he's not doing the two European races. And the most information I could find out about it is he wasn't there. That was it. That's all I could find out. And I had a bit of a troll through Twitter and some of the online, like Pink Bike and a couple of the other places. And it wasn't just me. There was a whole heap of sort of hardcore mountain bike fans going, where's Seminuk? Why isn't he here? Like, is he doing a shoot? Is he injured? Nothing. There was just nothing out there about it. I just thought it was a little interesting sort of twist to that niche sport thing where you're not big enough that there's enough guys that can go, oh, you know, the best rider in the world isn't here, and this is why. He's off in Fiji shooting a video, or he's doing this for Red Bull, or he's broken two of the fingers in his hand. But there was just nothing, no information.
What, he hadn't
at all.
Posted anything on Twitter himself? Like, no, his Instagram was quiet? That sounds a bit odd because
it's really weird.
Generally,
it's,
when a motorcyclist really misses a race, it's because you go to his Instagram and there's like a nice, fresh photo of a X-ray. If you want to be grossed out, check out Ian Hutchinson, who's like a Isle of Man TT type road racer guy. He had he's a fucking gun, but he had a crash in the last race of the TT. And broke his leg, the one that had been broken forever. And he's been sharing some pictures of the damage that it's done to him and the things they're doing to it. And it is
horrendous.
Grim, super grim. You know, he's just like, and here's my ankle that they pulled out. And it's just, and the funny thing is that he's trading tweets with McGuinness, John McGuinness, who's also a legend of the TT, who crashed in the Northwest 200, which is the race before the TT. And they sort of been sort of trading gross surgery pictures and recovery pictures and legs in cages and things. And it's sort of, you guys are a different fucking species of human. There's just nothing to be said for it other than that. You are just remarkable and gross.
So Rogatkin, who's like a high risk, high reward sort of rider, crashed out both runs. Seminuk wasn't there.
He wouldn't come to the Australian NBL.
No. And then so the sort of third guy that was sort of getting up to that level that Rogatkin and Seminuk were at was Brett Reeder, who's another young Canadian guy.
Not Rhett Breeder.
And he did an ACL in one of the races last year and was sort of working his way back, and everyone was sort of wondering whether he'd find the form again, and absolutely nailed it and won. So it'll be interesting to see. So now we've sort of got a three-way race between him and Seminuk and Rogatkin. So it'll be interesting to see him versus Rogatkin this weekend, which has actually started right now. They're racing right now. So which to you people is in the past, and you could probably look up the results. So
everything is in the past if it's not.
Women's Cricket World Cup's on at the moment, which I'm sort of again vicariously following through Twitter.
Yes, there was a Google Doodle involved a little game of something or other going on.
Well, I think this one might actually, because of all the T20 stuff that's happened it's funny how T20 is sort of like these T20 leagues. They were talking about Pakistan winning the Champions Trophy and how the Pakistan T20 comp has really helped their young players get reps in the one day, you know, like in short form cricket, and how it was a couple of almost one day rookies that really stepped up for them in the Champions League. And I think the same thing's happened in the women's one day stuff, where all these players are just basically traveling around now. You know, they're coming to Australia, they're going to England, they're playing these T20 comps. And so instead of sort of having just England and Australia, or, you know, the sort of same old teams and rivalries, you know, India's a force, Sri Lanka's a force, South Africa's a force, because they've all got these guns that are playing lots and lots of cricket instead of playing, you know, 1 month out of 12. I guess they're sort of, they're not paid like professionals, but they're playing and training like professionals now.
Yes. I don't have anything to add to that.
I just find it fascinating.
Couple sign, motherfucker!
I just think this is going to be one of
give
the most.
Give me something to work with, man.
I just think it's going to be one of the most competitive Women's World Cups. And I just find, like, everyone sort of thought T20 would be the death of the other formats, but it's interesting how these little ripples from not the obvious places, like not the Indian Premier League, but, you know, the women's comps and the Pakistan T20 comp that are sort of still affecting the quality of international cricket down the line. Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting little thing.
Speaking of cricket, shouts to Luke Ronke, who's retired. I think he was very briefly an Australian international, but being Kiwi born, when his chances were extinguished over there. He came over here and played very effectively for New Zealand. We'll never forget his 170 off fuck all against Sri Lanka when he came in many down in a one-day match here in Dunedin. That was probably the high point of his entire career because he wasn't particularly good at any other point, but had a good time. So shouts to him.
Yep.
And shouts to you, the listener.
Yep. This has been the Balls Podcast.
My God, it's a back announce.
We shall come back and talk tunes, of which I have many, many feels.
You have many, many tune feels. This is, if you're interested in what we do, follow us on Twitter or Facebook or both. Probably Twitter, because you get the full experience of Fizzo just going the fuck off. And occasionally me popping in going, I disagree with everything he's tweeted.
I disagree with him. Yeah. This is not me.
None of this goes for me.
But to be fair, you can tell. See, the problem is I've got someone at work that follows my work Twitter account. So, you know,
I figured, why are you here bothering people on this account?
I've got someone at work who follows me on Twitter. So,
what a punisher.
And like, I can't really block them. that would be fairly blunt.
You could soft block them though, which is you block and block, and then they're not following you anymore. And it's sort of how long before they realise that they've unfollowed you.
So anyway, yes, when I like to go on my little rants, which is occasionally, especially about basketball or cricket. Contract negotiations, then, you know, I do it from the balls.
Well, I understand now, because previously I was thinking, I don't co-sign any of this shit. This is bad, I don't want it reflecting on me. But now I know you're trying to not work at work and get away with it, then I respect it.
But also, I think it's good for us to, when we do interact with NBA Twitter, it is good to put the name out there.
It is, but it'd be nicer if some actual valid opinions were attributed to it while you were doing that.
Hey, there was many, many reporters that agreed with my rant
All your takes belong to Ben.
Give us an iTunes rating too, so we've at least got two decent ones. Someone actually gave us a bad iTunes review, which I find hilarious. And if it was you, Adam, I'm not impressed.
We're still not having him want to fucking talk about Devin Leppard, are we?
Good night, Doc.
Oh, God.